For those of you who haven't come here for very long, on a Friday night I give a talk which applies the Buddhist principles to problems which you face in daily life, and to see how you can get some wonderful solutions. And I do invite people to make suggestions of the sorts of topics they would like to hear. And because I've been teaching for such a long time that I don't think there's any topic which I haven't touched upon. So sometimes there's some repetition, but even by repeating some topics you've talked about before, sometimes you add a slightly different nuance to the talk. But anyway, the topic I'm going to talk about this evening was something which was suggested, which is about relationships and Buddhist advice, or ways of dealing with one of the problems and joys which you have in your life with relationships. But of course it doesn't just mean the relationship you have with your partner, it also means the relationship you have with the other members of your family, with your friends, and also, most importantly, your relationship with yourself. And lastly, the most important, your relationship with life. And it's very true to say that all the problems of life are relationship problems. Because, you know, you can't change life. Life is like this. You know, sometimes it's hot, sometimes it's cold. I don't know my sort of karma. You can see that because I'm a monk, I always sit close to these shrines. They've all got all these flowers on them, and I suffer from hay fever. I've been trying for years to get the Buddhist Society to have plastic flowers on here so that I don't get hay fever. We got all new flowers, but I just, oh, that's just my karma, to sit closer than anyone to the flowers. So, whatever you do in life, you can't control things, you can't change the world, but you can always change your relationship to the world. So the whole of life is like a relationship. You might have a cancer, you might have someone dying, you may be suffering some argument, and it's your relationship to these things. That is where the problem lies, and that's where the solution lies. You can't change life, but you certainly can change your relationship to it. So let's start at the big problem, the relationship to your partner. Now, of course, I've been a celibate monk now for 35 years, so I know all about relationships with partners. Strange, isn't it? How does a monk know about married life? I know a lot because many of you tell me all your secrets. And also that I have the great joy of actually doing marriage ceremonies. And of course, Dennis, our president here, is also a marriage celebrant. So we have a great time together. We always make the joke that he marries them and I keep them together, because when there's any trouble, they don't go and see him, they come and see me. So I've got to make sure it's done in a proper way. So the relationship between people is one important story or metaphor which I use in marriages. And Dennis knows this. And I did this very recently when I think somebody came for a blessing for their marriage when I was in UK. So they'd just been married and they wanted a blessing for me. They knew I was only going to be there for a few days. So I looked them in the eye. I looked the girl in the eye first of all and said, from now on, now you're married, you should never ever think of yourself. And she nodded. And I looked at the new husband and said, from now on, you're a married man, you're a husband, you shouldn't think of yourself either. And he smiled, still looking at the man. I said, and from this day on, you should never think of her either. And I love that point where he gets totally confused. And she starts to think, what's this mad monk talking about? And then I look at her and I say, from this moment on, you should never think of him. And one of the wonderful things about teaching is actually using confusion. Because when you're confusion, all your old ideas, the way you think things should be done, are totally taken away so you can see a new path. So confusion is a way of seeing the truth when all of your old ideas are taken away. So I told them, this is another saying which I said to some military people. Now there's Buddhists in the British Army, and they came to see me when I was over there. And one of the sayings I said, you can write this down if you like, it's a great saying for your life. Never allow your knowledge to stand in the way of truth. Never allow your knowledge to stand in the way of truth. All of your knowledge about relationships, what you think it should be, don't allow that to stand in the way of seeing things deeper, to stand in the way of truth. So they thought their knowledge was, in a relationship you just think of the other person, be selfless. So I said, no, don't think of the other person, don't think of yourself. The solution is, from now on, you only think of us. You're a pair. If you think of yourself, you're missing the point of a relationship. If you think of your partner, you're missing the point again. Because the relationship is not about me, not about them, always about us. Now when you get that in your head, in a relationship, straight away it means it's not her problem. It's not his problem. It's not my problem. Whose problem is it? Our problem. Doesn't matter who started it, it's always our problem. The trouble with relationships, why it doesn't work, is because we always put the blame on somebody else. My stupid husband. You wouldn't believe just what a selfish, ignorant bum he is. Or, that wife. She just spends all my money, she's got all the credit cards. You know about the man who gave his wife plastic surgery? He cut up her credit cards. Plastic surgery, cut credit, okay. I did try having a joke every now and again. But it's not her fault, it's not his fault. And also, how many people in a relationship get guilty and they take the blame on themselves, think it's my fault? It's always our fault, because when it's our fault, it means there's a problem there which we share, which we can solve. But all of those problems, of course, you know, they can only be solved together. No one can solve those problems alone. They have the problems which we create together, which we can solve together. And when is that commitment to work together? It's our problem, therefore it must be our solution. Then we both take ownership of the problem. And that's such an important thing, not to give that ownership to somebody else, not to take it on just for yourself, but to share it. With that shared ownership of the problem, you find there's all sorts of innovative ways to overcome that problem. And when we say it's our problem, you see, it's something which we share. What we share, we put between us. Now, if you share a meal together, you've got all those beautiful dishes on the table between you. If you share a life, it's between you. The relationship is always between you. And so in those sorts of relationships between husband and wife, or between gay partners or just friends, you always look not at her, not at him. Where else can you look except the space between us? That's a beautiful way of regarding a relationship, because the action does not lie in me, does not lie in you, but is actually what's in between us. It's one of the tricks which I use every Friday evening to give talks. When I'm giving a talk, I'm never thinking of myself, I'm never thinking of you either. I always put my attention in what happens between us. And when you put your attention to what happens between us, that's where the action is of life. The relationship's what's between me and you. And then you put these beautiful, wonderful qualities, like peace, like kindness, like respect. It's as like you have like a mirror, like a filter in front of you. And you can put whatever you like between you and another person. You can put like the filter of hatred or fear or mistrust between you and the other person in the relationship. And if that's what you put between you and the other person, say mistrust, You're always looking at that person and doubting their motives, doubting their sincerity, and everything you see or hear or feel about them is seen through this filter of distrust. And no wonder that distrust builds and builds and builds until the relationship just falls apart. Well, you put fear between you and another person. You just see them through fear. Just the same way that if you saw a person through a red window, everything would look red. It's just tinted that way. So you know that's actually what happens when we look or hear or see another person. So when I relate to another person, I always make sure, what have I got between me and them? And to make sure there's no negative stuff there, like fear, like control, like superiority or arrogance. You always put like things like peace and kindness, like respect. So I put that between me and the other person. I always imagine it's like this glass with respect on it. So when I look through it, I see the other person and I see all the things which are worthy of respect. I put forgiveness there, so I look with forgiveness. Because I find what you put between you and the other person is the way you look at them. And if you want to have a beautiful relationship, that's what you can do. It's not messing around with reality, because you find that what you see in the other person is what grows in them. What you expect is what you generate in the other person. So for example, if you have distrust, and you look at another person with distrust, you know, my husband, he comes home late every Friday evening, and he says he's going to this Buddhist temple over in Nolamara. I don't believe him. He's going to sort of some woman of loose repute. I know, because he comes back after the talk so happy. You don't get happy going to a church or a temple. He must be seeing someone, I know it. And if you actually look at a person with mistrust, again, that mistrust grows and grows, and the other person realizes, you don't trust me. And that relationship of mutual concern, mutual respect just fades away. I've known some people have mistrusted their husband, and they've hired a detective just to make sure that he really is coming to the Buddhist society every Friday evening. And what's happened when the husband finds out? He says, what, you did that? And the whole relationship just goes down to a very, very low level. They mistrusted them, and what they saw created a huge problem in their life together. So be careful, because if you put negative things between you and the other person in your relationship, you are actually killing that relationship. In the same way that you would like to be looked at with trust, with forgiveness, with kindness, with peace, and you notice how wonderful that is. I've said many, many times about the relationship I had with my father. Every time he looked at me, it was with this beautiful respect and kindness and forgiveness and love. And I learned from him that that's the way you relate to people. And what you look at other people for is what you find. Now, I've tried that several times, and maybe one of the most effective places I've used that was in my work in prisons, in jails. Because there you had a group of people, you know, who were wearing green, who went to bed every night with bars on their windows, looking out at barbed wire fences or high walls. And they'd lost all their respect. They were criminals. They were the lowest of society, locked away, their freedom taken away. Sometimes, many times, they'd lose the whole family. The wife would promise to wait for them for 2, 3, 4 years without any intimacy. Very often, the marriage broke up and they couldn't see their kids grow. Visit maybe every now and again, but that's not enough. So they were feeling so bad. When I went into those jails, I looked at those people not as a criminal there. There's a murderer. There's someone you should be very afraid of. I put this other thing in front of me in the criminal. Just love and respect. And because I looked at those murderers and rapists and thieves with respect, what I saw in them, they began to see in themselves. They thought, gee, this monk is actually respecting me. And he thinks I'm a nice guy. Maybe he's right. So they started looking themselves, and they did find the beautiful part of themselves. And that's what grew in them. It's wonderful actually to see that change. And I've seen it so many times in people who have done some terrible violent crimes, and just see themselves grow and have respect and realize that they're far bigger than the act which they did to get them into that jail. And when they have that respect, that beautiful, kind, peaceful, gentle part of them, that is what grows. And I've mentioned to you, it's okay to receive praise and share it with other people. One of the best compliments I've ever had in my life as a monk, one of the best ones, was being called up by one of the prison officers in Perth a few years ago. He called me and he wanted to speak to me personally. He wanted me to invite me back into the prisons to teach. You know, nowadays I'm really busy, you know, Albert, going around all the world looking after all sorts of things. And I said, look, I've got too much on my plate. I can't keep coming to prison. And there's other monks. I'll send another monk to your jail. He said, no, we want you. He said, look, other monks. He said, no, we want you. He said, why me? And what he said next almost brought tears to my eyes. He said, I've been in the prison system for many, many years. And I've noticed something very unique. All the prisoners who went to your class never ever came back into jail. When they were released for good. It worked. And this was, you know, a praise from a prison officer, someone who was on, they call the coal face of the prison system. And when I heard that, I thought, what the heck have I done? And why did that work? And I've told you now, the relationship which you had with these people was something which could actually generate, improve, encourage, and make grow the beautiful qualities in them. So if you can relate to a murderer like that and change them into a beautiful human being, I'm sure you can do something with your husband. Or even more with your wife. You can see it can be done. Now I know many of you, you want to sort of, you love someone, but they're never perfect. And you always want to make them a bit better and solve all the little problems and irritations and the stuff which happens in life, in a marriage. This is how you can do it. By putting your attention, don't blame the other person, don't blame yourself, put your attention in the middle and put some beautiful qualities in it. So you see through that beautiful quality and you see all those wonderful qualities, and what you see in another person is what grows in them. That's a natural law which I've discovered. What you see in another person, what you recognize, that's the quality which will grow in that person. I've used a simile, it's like whatever you water in your garden, that's what grows. If you water the flowers grow. If you water the weeds grow. Whatever you pay attention to in another person, that is what grows. So that's actually how, by putting something in the middle between us and the other person, we can make these amazing relationships. Of course, it's not something, no marriage is born in heaven. No relationship is meant to be. We make it happen. This is another Buddhist idea of, you know, that you are in total control of, in one sense, of generating and working with your relationship to life. The most important thing in life you are in total control of. Life itself is totally out of control, but the way you relate to it, that is your full control, because that's what we call law of karma. You can make something beautiful out of anything. And you know that story, if you want to know, understand the law of karma, two people baking the cake, the old cake simile, but it's a beautiful simile. I have to keep repeating this because sometimes people say the most stupid things about karma. One person has the very worst of ingredients, imagine white flour, which you've kept in the kitchen for so long, it's got green mouldy bits in it. And you have to take them out and just manage to keep enough good flour for your cake. And you have cholesterol-enriched butter. You've got diabetic-friendly white sugar. And you've got fruit, but it's so old and hard. It's harder than, what's it called, depleted uranium, the hardest substance known to mankind. And your kitchen is just very old and basic. So you've got the very worst of ingredients to use. And the other person has got the very best of ingredients. Imagine organically grown whole wheat flour, which has been grown in a field 1,000 kilometers from the nearest GM crops. You've got canola oil, which is supposed to be not just cholesterol free, but it's supposed to lessen the cholesterol in your body. And you've got beautiful honey, fresh from the hive. And the most delicious fruit, you know, just from the hills of Perth. And your kitchen, the kitchen which you have to cook it in, is the most modern, efficient, expensive kitchen you can find on the market. You've got the very best of ingredients. But the question always is, who cooks the best cake? It's a great question because, you know, it's not always the person with the best ingredients. Because the most important thing in a cake, in baking a cake, is the amount of care, love, skill which you put into your baking. That's 95% the contribution to a beautiful, tasty cake. Not the ingredients, but what you make of them. And the thing you know that there are some people who have got the worst ingredients make the most delicious cakes. Now, I often go to Asia, and I know for a fact that the most delicious food comes from the roadside stalls, the hawkers. I don't know why that is. Perhaps because they have to put so much effort and love into their cooking because they've got such competition. It's usually far more delicious than going to an expensive five-star restaurant. Five-star restaurant got the best ingredients and the best kitchen. The ones on the streets often make the most delicious food. It's just a case in point. So, what do we mean with relationships? It doesn't matter who your partner is. The ingredients you have to build up that relationship, it depends on how you put them all together. It means that don't think that your husband is a defective product which you want to hand in. Or your wife is sometimes, you know, the last on the shelf, which unfortunately you got dumped with. Don't think like that. Doesn't matter who they are or what they are. It's not the ingredients, it's actually what you make of those ingredients. And that means that whatever the person is, you or her or him, you can always do something with this and make it work. This is what the law of karma is. It's not sort of them. It's not me. The fault is in just we're not putting enough effort into the relationship, into the karma of making something happen. When you really understand that, you know there's no relationship which can't be fixed if you really have to and want to and have the skill to be able to fix it up. What's in between? Always put that in there. And that's the same with your kids, with your in-laws, you know, with, you know, the mother-in-law. I remember this is a joke from an English comedian. He said, mother-in-law, we'd invite her over to our house every year at Christmas time. Every year she would come to our house. And last year we decided to make an exception. we decided to let her in. Now, why is that funny? Because mothers-in-law have got this reputation of being so difficult, so much so that someone pointed out to me that mother-in-law, if you rearrange the letters of mother-in-law, it spells Hitler woman. When you get home, write it out, mother-in-law, rearrange the letters and it becomes Hitler. Now, why is that? Because we haven't got a decent enough relationship with our so-called mothers-in-law. So if you've got a mother-in-law who's giving you a very hard time, what should you do? You can't change her. You know, she comes as an attachment to the husband or wife which you buy. You know, it's in the deal. So, but what you can do is when you're with her, don't blame her or him if it's a father-in-law. Don't blame yourself. Look at the space between you and put this beautiful figure of love or respect or kindness between you and them. So actually see the beautiful side of them, kind side of them. And you'll be amazed how well that works. When you see the beautiful qualities in this person who's giving you a hard time, they tend not to give you a hard time anymore. It's amazing how you can recreate the relationship just by looking at what's in between. And of course that happens to yourself as well. This great relationship you have to yourself. When you look at yourself, what do you put between you and yourself when you're looking? Is it fear? Are you afraid of yourself? Or are you guilty about all those terrible things you have done in your life? How do you look at yourself? Remember, it's the same thing, the relationship you have with yourself. It's one of the most important relationships you'll ever have in your life. And again, too often people put fear and negativity. I don't know how many people think they're not good enough. It's one of the great insights in Buddhism. When one day you wake up and realize, I am good enough. What a relief. Because most of your life, people have been telling you, you're not good enough. You're not clever enough. You're not pretty enough. You're not successful enough. As a monk, you know, you don't meditate long enough. Your jokes are too silly, you repeat them every week. No, that's not how you look at life. You don't look at your life sort of remembering all these people who keep trying to push you and complain about you. Maybe the world might sort of give you a hard time by criticizing you. But you, how do you look at yourself? So at least for yourself, you look at yourself with a sense of kindness and love. And if you can look at yourself with a sense of kindness and love, and make peace with yourself, put peace, put kindness and love between you and every time you think of yourself, then you find you have this beautiful relationship with yourself. One of the things which I learned to do, even when I was a student, again, this is a story and open the door of your heart, but for those people who have anxiety, depression, guilt, fear, this is such a simple technique which is very, very effective. It works so well. I've taught this throughout the whole world. And it's such a simple thing to do. To get that nice relationship to yourself. When you first wake up in the morning and you go to the toilet, before you even urinate or wash your face, look at yourself in the mirror. My first teacher told me to do this when I was a student. When you get up in the morning, look at yourself in the mirror first of all, he said, and smile. My response was, sir, I'm a student. I stay up late at night doing all sorts of, well, you know what, I'm a student. When I wake up in the morning, if I looked at myself in the mirror, I'd probably be terrified of the way I looked. Do you look very well in the morning? You know that once when I was a student, this is at Cambridge, at our Emmanuel, the college I was in, the students' union made a request to the dons in the college, the masters, the ones who ran the college. They say, is it all right to invite our girlfriends into the hall for breakfast? because it was an all-male college, but everybody knew, you know, your girlfriends were bugging up over the night. You know what the don said? They said no. And the reason is because gentlemen do not look their best in the morning. That was just Cambridge in the 60s, a stupid comment. But it's true that you don't look your best in the morning, and I don't look my best in the morning. So imagine looking yourself in the mirror early in the morning. It says, I won't be able to smile. And he said, if you can't manage an ordinary smile, he said, get your two fingers. Here we go. Side of the mouth. And push up. And I did that for 2 years straight. Every morning I did this. And I saw this stupid person. And I laughed at myself every morning. You try that for 2 years. You can give up all your antidepressants. You can give up all of your negativity. Because that actually works. And what I was doing, every morning I was putting this fun, not taking myself too seriously, joy and happiness between me and the image in the mirror. I was looking at the beautiful, happy, joyful, and also playful side of myself. In a relationship, there has to be play as well. Like experimentation, play, literally like looking for fun. So many of the monks say I'm a playful monk, and I hope I never get that serious. I won't play around and mess around every now and again. Because that playfulness is not just useful in a relationship. You're trying new things, experimenting. No, not just doing the old stuff, but doing new stuff. Because that playfulness is always the source of creativity. I was taught that as a theoretical physicist. Take the equations, take the experiment, and don't just do it the way you're supposed to. Play with it. If it blows up, doesn't matter. It's a rich university. We'll get another set of equipment for you. And actually, sometimes it did blow up. But never mind. Sort of experiment, play. Because in that playing, there was a creativity, engagement, and there was progress when you're playing around. And that's an important part in a relationship, to play around. I don't mean play around with another woman or play around with another. That's not what I mean. I mean play around within the relationship. Because that gives you a lot of sort of fun. So actually putting fun between that relationship. And also playing around with yourself. You know, fun with yourself. It's like, you know, doing the two finger smile. And what that does, you get this beautiful relationship to yourself. And when you learn to have this wonderful relationship to yourself, have fun with yourself, and just see all your mistakes as just joyful. I don't know why it is that, you know, most people think the mistakes are things to hide. Mistakes are joyful things. Because, you know, when every time I've been to a funeral and we have these eulogies, I always wait for the embarrassing things which someone has done. I remember going to one of the people here at their funeral. They said that when they were very young, maybe 6 or 7, 7 years of age, there was a builder's toilet in the block next door. They were building a house, and they blew it up. I thought that was terribly funny. Because all those, you know, no one's inside, it's quite just kids being kids. Whenever you do something stupid like that, you know, it sort of creates happiness. I think I told you 2 weeks ago about sucking things through a spoon, but the other stupid things I was doing is I remember doing a funeral service once. And it was for a Sri Lankan couple who come here regularly, and they had a death in the family. So I went to, we did a funeral service for them. And of course, you know what it's like. It's very somber, the funeral service. And because it was, people who came here, their family members, I was very happy to take the time off and do their funeral service for them. Also, because I'm a Buddhist monk and they come here, you get cut price. Get discount. Actually, they don't usually give anything, so can't get more discount than that. But anyhow, at the funeral service, you know, I started it all off and welcomed everybody and started saying, you know, so we've come here to sort of do the funeral service, you know, for the mother of this two Sri Lankans who have been close friends and good supporters of the monastery for a long time. It's a tragedy to lose your mother. And at that point, this old lady, she was in the back, she stood up. And she said, "It's not me, stupid, it's my husband. It's their father who's died." Oh, and that was one of my most favourite funerals. Because from that time on, all the solemnity and seriousness were gone. It was like a celebration of this guy's life. And only a wife could say things like that, you know, to a dead husband. And one of the other times, just in the community hall of a marriage, I don't know if you were here that time, Dennis, we're doing a marriage ceremony, and it was like a Thai girl married an Australian. And as they both came in procession, actually the man actually was really old. So I said to him, "Oh, you must be the father of the groom." That was a mistake. Well, it could have been. He said, "No, I'm the groom." Well, that marriage never went down very well. But so you make a mistake, you share with people, and you make people laugh. So all these mistakes in life, they're just so much fun. So when I look upon myself, I'm not afraid of making mistakes. I look upon mistakes with this beautiful relationship. It's just playing. We all make mistakes. Let's laugh at them. And isn't that a beautiful, loving way to look at life? So we haven't got this great tension and fear when we make mistakes and do things wrong. That's one of the great things about being a Buddhist. You know, we don't have hell. You don't go to, well, actually we do have hell, but you send yourself down there, no one else does. You know, we don't have punishment, we don't do fear. You know, how many times have I made you guys afraid? If you don't put a donation in this donation box as you go out, you're going to have a car accident. Something terrible is going to happen to you. We don't do things like that at all. That's why the donation box is always empty. But we don't have that fear in Buddhism, because that's not the great relationship. With yourself, you feel like at peace with yourself. Okay, you make mistakes. We all make mistakes. We have this relationship of peace, acceptance, forgiveness and love with ourselves. That's such a beautiful thing to have. It means you relax. You become at peace with yourself. You can never become at peace with yourself by trying to change yourself and making yourself perfect, whatever that is. That's never how you're going to become enlightened, or how you can find any happiness or tranquility in life. You can't find contentment by trying to change yourself. You find contentment and peace by changing your attitude towards yourself, your relationship towards yourself. So you look at yourself and make peace with yourself, with your life, with your body, with all the silly things which you do, even with sometimes the pain and disappointment of life. Yes, sure, terrible things happen, but is it good or is it bad? Someone sent me this story last week about, you know, these Buddhist stories, always about kings because they're very ancient, about a king who was out hunting and cut his finger. So his royal doctor treated the finger. And the king said, "Is it good? Is it okay?" And the doctor said, "Good or bad, who knows?" And after a couple of days, the finger was infected. So the king went to the doctor again. "What's happening? It's infected. Is it okay?" And the doctor said, "Good or bad, who knows?" Now, it didn't really impress the king at all. But you never know, you trust the doctor. So a few days later, it was so infected that the doctor had to cut it off and amputate it. Good or bad? I know it's bad. And he sent the doctor into jail for not being a good doctor. And as soon as he sent him into jail, "Well, what do you think about that?" And he said, "Good or bad? Who knows?" As he went into prison. Thank you for laughing, Lawrence. It's always very pleasing for a monk when you tell a story and somebody laughs. You can come every week. So the next few days, with the doctor in jail, the king went hunting again. And this time he was chasing something in the forest, and he went deep and deep into the jungle, and he got captured by these jungle people. And he got captured and they took him to be sacrificed to their gods. But as soon as they saw he was one finger short, no, we can't sacrifice you, you're not perfect enough, so he let him go. So he managed to walk back to the kingdom, and you think, wow, how fortunate I was. If I had all my fingers, I'd be dead by now. So he went to see that doctor in jail and said, wow, it was true, I lost my finger, but so who knows what it's good or bad. Actually, it was good for me. So thank you very much, I can let you out now. And he said, I'm really sorry I did a bad thing sending you to jail. He said, what do you mean bad thing sending me to jail? It was a good thing I went to jail. Because if I hadn't gone to jail, I would have been with you on the hunt. They'd have captured me. I got all my fingers. I'd be dead. So what that means in that story, you know, good or bad, who knows? So your husband sort of leaves you for another girl. Good or bad, who knows? It's true, you don't know what's going to happen next. You lose your house. Good or bad, who knows? The wonderful thing about life, it's just so uncertain. You don't know what's going to happen next. That's a great thing about life. All of these things which happen in life, you have a beautiful relationship to life. Where we don't go blaming life or getting angry and upset at life. Good or bad. Who knows? When my girlfriend dumped me, oh, but wonderful, thank you so much, girlfriend. Because if you hadn't dumped me, who knows, I might be married, three kids, divorced, with a big mortgage, crazy like everybody else. So thank you so much, girlfriend, for dumping me. Oh, it's so good of you. I remember this man came to Serpentine Monastery once, and he told me something, one of these events, true events, unbelievable but true, which changed his life. He was an Australian businessman, and he was doing some sort of business in, you know, Mumbai, you know, Bombay it was called in those days, and he had to get his plane back. I think he was going to England. So he got in a taxi from the airport, from his hotel, take me to the airport. And so the taxi took him to the airport, but got totally lost. And even the taxi drivers, sometimes in these big cities, don't know their way around. So got totally lost. And the time was ticking away, they had a plane to catch, and this Australian guy was getting more and more anxious and upset and angry. Now come on, you're a taxi driver, you should know the way, get me to the airport, ask a policeman, ask somebody, get me there. And then he was, the last thing he was hoping, there was a good possibility that the aircraft was delayed, as it often is in India. But when he got to the airport at last, he actually saw his flight taking off. He saw it going up. Damn, driver! I've missed my plane. And then he saw the plane come down again. Crashed with all people on board dead. He saw that. He thought, gee, thank you, taxi driver. I don't know, he probably gave him a huge tip. But it was something which changed his whole life. Because then he thought, how can you be so angry and critical of things when you don't know what it would have been like if it hadn't worked out that way? So it's good or bad. Who knows? It's a beautiful philosophy of life. It means you don't get negative at all. You failed your exams, your TEE, good or bad. Who knows? You get the biopsy result back. You've got cancer. Good or bad? Do you know? Who knows? I've seen many. Look, we had a cancer group come to Serpentine last week on Tuesday. They enjoyed themselves immensely. They would never heard this teaching, this beautiful freeing teaching, if they hadn't had cancer. Well, how fortunate they were to have that cancer so they could really learn meditation and free their minds. Good or bad? Who knows? So, can you see what I'm getting at here? Now we have this beautiful relationship to life. No more negativity, No more blaming. Not looking at life and putting this negativity in between us and the experiences which we have in life, but putting this beautiful acceptance, love, playfulness, even inquisitiveness. Who knows? Let's find out what happens. And because that life is a relationship problem, whatever we have to deal with, we can always make it work. Sure that sometimes you get bad ingredients in life. Sure that sometimes you think, why me? When people come and tell me that, why me? Why did this have to happen to me? Shut up. Stop getting negative. The question is not why me, but what are you doing about this? You can always do something with whatever you get in life. And that's the relationship you have to life. There's always something you can do with it. Something to learn, to grow, to have fun, no matter what you have to experience in life. So when we have the relationship to life, you know, to put this beautiful sense of play, experiment, we know we can do something with it. We have this incredible relationship which takes away much, if not all, of the suffering and the pain and the disappointment and frustration in life. We can always do something positive with it. So when we have this wonderful relationship to life, we have this wonderful relationship to ourselves. We finally have a wonderful relationship to our friends and loved ones. We have a wonderful relationship to our partner, the one who's closest with us. Good or bad, who knows? But there's always something I can do with that. And that way, that positivity, because you're seeing the beautiful in that other person, you're seeing the positive in life, you're seeing something you can respect in yourself, and you can see something you can do no matter what happens in life. Your whole attitude totally changes. And life doesn't become suffering anymore. It's not a problem anymore. It's a challenge, it's a journey, it's exciting, it's interesting, and you learn and grow so much on your journey. At the end of the life, all those things at the time which you thought were difficult, you realize what they're there for. They're all growing experiences. I always remember the teachers I was with at school. I went to visit my old school just 2 weeks ago when I was in London. I was the only alumni who's a Buddhist monk. Unique. But anyway, they were very happy to see me there. But I always remember the teachers at that school, the ones I really liked. I didn't learn very much from. So ones who really sort of pushed me, you know, the ones which were unpleasant, they're the ones I learned so much from. They pushed me to learn, to find out more. Sometimes in life, it's the difficult experiences are the ones we learn the most from. So understanding that type of philosophy, when you do have a difficulty or a problem, great, it's where we grow, where we learn. This is the place where we generate amazing qualities. So, it's not the events of life, but the relationships we have to life. It's not the partner we're stuck with, it's always the relationship we have with them. And that relationship is totally in your control. You can change, you can manipulate, and I've told you how to do that. To put these beautiful qualities between you and that person. So when you look at them, when you feel them through this like coloured glass. And because you look at it through that way, those are the qualities which actually grow in them. Now these are not just theories, these are actually practices. And just to let you know that tomorrow Dennis and I, we're going to Thailand together. Because after last week's ordination, there's some trouble brewing. But so how do we deal with actually trouble when people think, oh, you've ordained nuns, that's a terrible thing for you to do, you're not allowed to do that. So there's a relationship problem which we were going to have with some of the senior monks in Thailand. So Dennis, you can actually check me out to see whether I'm a hypocrite whether I say one thing here and do something else actually in practice, when I see those monks, I'm going to put between me this beautiful respect, love and kindness. That's how I'm going to see the people who are criticizing. I don't know why they criticize a peculiar ordination. It's a wonderful, noble thing to do. To open the possibility, you know, for all women to be equal partners in the Sangha. And it's an obvious thing for us to do here in Australia. It's the 21st century. So this monk told me when he told his daughter, her remark was, "Very good, father, at last you're getting into the 20th century." Not the 21st century yet, but we're trying to make some progress. But sometimes, you know, when you hear that some monks, and these are not just Thai monks and Western monks living in Thailand, are very negative, how do you feel? Don't look at them with negativity. They've got no right to do this. This is not the Catholic Church. This is not the Popes. How do you look at them? Never look at people with negativity and think, you guys, you misogynist, you fascist, you whatever, don't do things like that. That's wrong. If that's what you look at them with, that's what they become. So you look at them with kindness, with respect, with gentleness, and put your mind through that, and I think that those are the qualities they will show back. So because you do that, that's how we can solve these little problems. We'll see if it works. One last little story. I always call this Julie's story. It's a very beautiful story of how these things, relationship problems, work in real life. Julie is a friend who lives over in Sydney. Whenever I go to Sydney to teach over there, she always comes, listens to my talks. She's got a very cute little girl called Holly, and I'm her monk, little Holly. So, on one occasion, she told me that she's in the fashion business, started a business herself, worked really hard and was doing quite well. So she was doing a contract with a big company in London, and no negotiations had gone on over the internet, over the phone. Come to the point, time to sign the contract, or negotiate the final details. Can you come to London immediately? Now, I was just in London. It's bad enough flying from Perth to London. From Sydney to London, that's even further. So she dropped whatever she was doing, got on the next available flight, and flew to Heathrow. When she got to Heathrow, she had time just to check into the hotel, shower and change, no time for a rest, and turn up to the headquarters of this big company, and go into the boardroom. And she said she was jet-lagged, she was tired, and what she was met with was the other directors saying, "You have wasted your time. The CEO is in a filthy mood this morning. He's been shouting and swearing at everybody. We know him. There's no way in the world you are going to get your contract signed. If I was you," said the directors, "go back to the hotel and book the next flight back to Sydney." And of course, she said, "I'm not going to do that. I've come all this way. At least I'm going to see the guy." "Suit yourself," they said. So what did she do? There she was going to have a conflict with this angry person. So she told me she sat in a corner. She'd learned how to meditate. She did some loving kindness meditation. Only about for 5 minutes. And then the door swung open. The managing director, the CEO, came in. "Who is she? What's she doing there?" Do I do anger very well? I really try hard, but you know, it's not really in me. But so please forgive me if I'm not really good at some of these things. Kindness and love, I'm good at that. But anyway, who's she? What does she want? And so she came out of her meditation because she had met her. She said she had met her between her and this CEO, who was glaring at her. And so she said these words came out of her mouth, and she said, totally unexpected, because she was had loving kindness between her and this angry CEO, she noticed his eyes and said, "You've got such beautiful blue eyes like my baby Holly back in Sydney. That's what she said. And the CEO was stunned. He was silent for about a minute and replied, "Really?" "That's actually what happened," she said. And the next 5 minutes she had her contract signed. It was an amazing piece of how to deal with conflict. Because she had loving kindness. That was between her and the other people. So that's what she saw in the CEO, his beautiful eyes. And when someone saw something beautiful to respect, of course, the CEO saw it in himself and gave it back to her. She got her contract signed. Beautiful business. And what happened? She went back to her hotel, but they wouldn't let her go back. All the directors, she said, crowded around her. "How the hell did you do that? Teach us how to do that." So she spent a few minutes teaching them how to do loving kindness meditation. Now this is true stories about how relationships with angry people, with difficult people, and the most difficult of all is yourself. If you put something beautiful between you and yourself, your relationship, you can change the whole of the world. The world is a relationship problem. Get the relationship right, and you're sweet. So that's the talk for this evening on relationships. Okay, anyone got any questions about this evening's talk? If you think of a question to ask, but you're afraid, put sort of trust between you and me. And then you won't feel afraid of asking the question. Yes, it worked. Good. It's feasible to do the loving kindness for a few minutes. And then you can just imagine, just putting this big ball of love there. This big ball of confidence. This big ball of fearlessness. This big ball of respect. So I see you through this respect. So I respect you for answering that question. Wonderful question. Thank you so much. Now when you actually see that through there, I mean, you feel that. So you can actually do it just like any other training. It's just how you train yourself to put the attention in the space between you and that experience. Just like a way of perceiving, which is actually very positive and very powerful. Is that okay?
Arahaṃ sammā sambuddho bhagavā Buddhaṃ bhagavantaṃ abhivādhemi Sāvakkhāto bhagavata dhammo dhammaṃ namassāmi Suppatipanno bhagavato Sāvakkha-saṅgho, saṅghaṃ namāmi.